This podcast is brought to you by BrunnerAcademy.com, your online resource for the best public speaking, presentation, storytelling skills courses. Become a rockstar communicator in any setting. Visit BrunnerAcademy.com.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Live Your Best Life with Liz Brunner. I'm Liz, and my goal with each episode is to share stories of people who are recreating their lives or rising above challenges to write their next chapters with authenticity. These stories give me the courage to go after living my best life, and I think they will do that for you too. If you like this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to the show, so this podcast can continue to inspire next chapters all over the world. Being human is tricky, says my guest today. Tricky because we all want to feel loved, to feel like we matter, and yet we're looking in all the wrong places. And he speaks from his own personal experience. He had a dream job in the music industry, working with some of the biggest stars, U2, Usher, Avril Lavigne, just to name a few. But it all came crashing down after a complete mental breakdown. But in that brokenness, he discovered that none of that mattered. And today, he's helping millions of people discover how much they matter and why. Matt Amirzian, welcome to my podcast. It's so good to see you, my friend.
Thank you, Liz. I'm honored to be here.
Well, one of the quotes on your website says this, quote, "I wish birth certificates came with a warning label. Anxiety, depression, loneliness, and confusion happen here, but so do love, joy, and goodness." And Matt, you've experienced it all. When did those words come to you to create that quote?
I wrote that?
You did.
Yeah. That's interesting. Because I grew up like in a dream childhood, amazing small community on a cul-de-sac, super close with my brother, with my mom and dad and my best friends. I talked to them every day. Elementary school, middle school, high school, college, water polo, All-American. Everything just seemed to work until I realized that there was a whole lot more to life that I had never experienced. It caught me off guard. It rocked my world. I don't know if it's even appropriate to say this, but in some ways, like, was my childhood too perfect? Do I wish I had some tougher experiences when I was younger? Do I wish someone gave me a warning? Yeah, it's awesome now, but you know what? It might not always be awesome. Because I don't know that I was really prepared for what ended up happening to me.
Matt is a 4-time best-selling author and founder and CEO of a wonderful nonprofit called Every Monday Matters. And the journey that he took to get to this point is one that everyone needs to hear. So your first career chapter, Matt, happened all because you met Robert Kardashian. Yes, as in the Robert Kardashian. How did that happen?
Yeah, well, what's interesting about that is just to go back just one beat on that is when I finished business school at UCLA, got my MBA, and I had a couple job offers, and I was trying to decide which job I was going to take. And my best friend at the time was a lead singer of a band that just signed to Sony Records. And John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin produced their album. And so they called me up on a Monday night to watch Monday Night Football, have some beers, have some other stuff, and get me nice and primed to ask me the question is, will I be the manager of their band? Because I was feeling so good, I thought it was the best idea in the world. And we ended up signing a contract on a Domino's pizza napkin that I was now the band manager of Elephant Ride. And then after doing that for a few years, I heard about Robert Kardashian. And, you know, I'm old, so I thought Robert was just an attorney from O.J. Simpson trial. That's all I ever knew of him. I did not know that he was actually a very successful music man, and he had started an industry publication that he sold and had done very well. The only thing we had in common is that we were both Armenian. Like, that's the only way I could, like, what's a touch point I could do to get a hold of Robert Kardashian? But I ended up getting the meeting. It was amazing. I showed up with some bands on CDs, like those old silver things that we used to listen to music on. And I played him some music, and he did not like any of the music I brought him. He happened to like me a lot. Yeah. And in that moment, he offered me a job.
And then one thing leads to another, and you keep progressing, you keep getting promoted, and now you're living this celebrity high life. How did that make you feel at that time?
I mean, it felt good. I was working for Robert Kardashian, you know, Kim and Khloe and Kourtney all ran the front office. So all their friends were there all the time, Paris and Brittany and Christina. And You know, it was a blast. I don't know how else to say it. How did I find myself in this position? And then, you know, next thing you know, you're working with these artists, many of I was huge fans of. U2, right, to me, is the ultimate band ever. And to get to work with them, I remember being at a concert, one of their shows, and I was standing there next with Ali, Bono's wife, and I was holding Eli, their 2-year-old son, and while U2's performing. And like, how in the heck did I find myself here? So it was fun. It felt good. It was nice to be VIP, red carpet at the Grammys. You get it. You've been around that enough to know that it has a way of elevating how you see yourself, for better or for worse.
I didn't quite know that many celebrities like that level, but I do understand what you're talking about. But somewhere along the way, Matt, you have this gnawing sense of uneasiness that begins to creep in. What's going on? What's creeping into your life and your brain and your feelings?
Things were creeping in, but I don't know that I was paying attention to the things that were creeping in. I made sense of a lot of it in hindsight after my breakdown. What was happening was I was showing up at places, and I started noticing things differently. I would show up at a pool party, you know, at some celebrity's house during the summer. I would see these, you know, 50, 60-year-old guys doing push-ups before they took their shirts off to go swimming. Or I was starting to notice just how shallow it all was. And then I started like, am I going to be one of those guys one day? If I don't change what I'm doing, am I going to be right where they are? I was in Las Vegas for an event. I guess it was probably my first bout with anxiety. I got really overcome by this thing. I didn't even know it was called anxiety at the time. In hindsight, now I realized it was. So these things started popping up for me. I started feeling a little more lost. I started feeling like I didn't fit in. I started being in places that a lot of people would think were probably pretty cool, but I felt like I was alone in a packed room. Those senses started coming to me, and I started to realize, I think, like, this is not how I was brought up. This is not the kid who used to play in orchards and swim in canals. This is different. And maybe I don't fit here.
And then it happens. One Monday morning, your life completely changes. Take us back to that day. And then when you go to see the doctor, what he actually tells you.
I was living down in Newport Beach at the time, California, about an hour south of Los Angeles. My mom's best friend actually lives there, and they had set me up on a blind date on Sunday night. Everyone was hell-bent on getting Matt Immersion married. What's wrong with him? Maybe he's just gay. So I went on a blind date with a gal. I realized within the first 5 minutes, it wasn't going to be the fairy tale story that my family and my mom's best friend's family all thought I was hoping it was going to be. I started feeling a little bit off during that dinner, went home, just kind of went to bed. Monday morning, I woke up. The only way I can describe it is I thought I was having a heart attack. It was the racing heart, sweating profusely, shortness of breath, and also just the sense of like, I had so much energy inside of me and I didn't know what to do with it. I literally just ran out the front door and I just went running around in circles, like out and around my community, freaking out basically. And I got in my car. I called my mom and dad. I said, I'm heading to Modesto. That's a 6-hour drive. Within 20 minutes, I'm stopped in dead traffic. For those of you who've experienced anxiety, being stuck in places isn't the best place to be. I ended up doing a U-turn on the freeway, and I drove straight to my doctor, and they just immediately said, hey, listen, we're going to check your heart, but we think your heart's fine. We just think you're having a severe panic attack. I just never knew what it was until that moment. Then everything changed.
And he says to you, whatever you're doing needs to change. How do you even begin to know what to change?
I don't know that I knew the severity. Even in that moment, there's a part of me, and I'm a pretty optimistic, positive person. Okay, this is just some little thing. It's going to go away. But I quickly realized that that was not going to be the case, and that this was going to be around for a hot minute, and I was about to go on a journey. Because that little panic attack turned into chronic anxiety disorder and depression. I refused to take any medicine in the beginning. The doctor wanted me to get on some medications. I refused it all. I think, no, I'll just be fine. But then I realized, no, I need help. I need support. It's not just changing one or two little things. I actually really have to take this serious. I had to acknowledge the fact that I had to put in the work, and it was going to be work.
One of the pieces of work is with your therapist, Denise. You call her your expensive friend.
That's right, my expensive friend.
And she says to you, until you understand what it means to live a life not about you, you're never going to get better or feel better. How do you take that advice?
You know, when you're working in the most narcissistic industry in the world, and in some ways you become a little bit narcissist yourself, I didn't know how to take it. But I mean, I surrendered to the process, and I put full faith into my therapist, my expensive friend. I got very lucky. She's the first therapist I saw, and I knew immediately she was the right fit for me. And so I trusted her wholeheartedly. You know, I was an athlete my whole life. I loved being coached. I do really well when I'm coached. I was like, okay, I hear you. Then what do I need to do to learn this? It became a recipe of every Saturday, I'd go do something that wasn't about me. Pick up litter, read to elderly, plant a tree, paint over graffiti. I was just on this weekly dose. It was very secretive. Like, no one knew I was doing this. Mm-hmm. No one really knew about what I was going through either. Mm-hmm. And later I learned that our secrets are our sickness, and which also allowed me to talk about it more freely with you right now, even to be like, this is going to be my journey. I'm going to learn to know what it means to live a life that's not about me. And somehow, somewhere in that, I'm going to find a new purpose and a new meaning. And I think just find me again.
What I think is so interesting too about that particular journey of your recovery, where you're doing all this volunteer work, is you begin to start to make these different changes, different choices in your life. You start to change the narrative in your brain, and not everyone likes the changes. And sometimes it's often with the people that you're closest to, they're like, wait a minute, that's not who I knew you to be. How did you deal with that?
It was hard. And I knew that there was going to be some relational carnage as I took this new journey. You know, a lot of times people are down on what they're not up on. Sometimes when you're around people and you decide to change, it forces them to have to look at themselves as well, right? And
that's,
they don't want to. It's scary. They don't want to have to do that. I was called everything from a do-gooder to a Bible thumper to plenty of names out there. I was starting to say no to things I used to say yes to all the time. And then they'd say, well, why? And I'd say, well, because I'm going to go out and pick up litter instead. And it was just like, you know, needle on the record. Like, okay, what? In fairness to all these people, they didn't really know what I was going through, this journey that I was on, because I was still working in the business. I still had a job. I still had to perform and, quote unquote, have a reputation to protect. There were some changes, but I knew there were going to be some changes there. Even harder, though, there were going to be some changes even closer to me. There were conversations that I had to have with my family that were not easy to have. I'm the youngest. I was always the baby. And there were some things that there I had to have as well with a mom and dad who could not be more loving if they even tried. There were going to be some growing pains on this journey for sure. But I trusted those who understood it, those who loved me, were going to understand. And also there was, I think, this eye on the prize of like, I didn't know what I didn't know. I knew that there was going to be something out there, a world out there that was going to be even more fulfilling and beyond my wildest dreams of what I knew at the time.
You know, one of the things you said no to was the music industry.
Yes.
So what gave you the courage to walk away from all of that?
That was the hardest part. The industry I didn't love per se, but the art of music I was wildly in love with and infatuated by. I cannot play a musical lick to save my life. So to be in a studio with a band as they're recording an album, it was like heaven. It was time. There was no time. And to watch a vocalist lay down a lead vocal track and then the harmonies and the counter harmonies. And I love the drumming recording days. I just, to see them create this piece of art out of nothing was just heavenly to me. And I just loved being there, and I could be there all day for several days in a row. And I knew I was saying no to that. That was hard for sure.
But the courage to do that, I mean, that eventually leads to you starting to write, which your first book, Every Monday Matters, How to Kick Your Week Off with Passion, Purpose, and Positivity. And then eventually this all leads to you starting a business. You walk away from the music industry. And initially, it's a for-profit business, but You then make a decision to turn it into a nonprofit. How did you make that decision? Why did you make that decision to go from being a profit to a nonprofit?
Number one, as a for-profit company, our main two products or services were we were doing work inside of schools, and then we were doing work inside of companies. Started as me doing keynotes, then team building experiences, and then ongoing annual culture programs, engagement programs. We are deep in education, deep in corporate engagement. I was asked by a judge who was using my book as part of a restorative justice program with convicted felons. And she asked if I would come and speak to these men and women. After sharing with them for maybe 15, 30 minutes, I think I talked to them. They were all in prison jumpsuits, handcuffs, waist chains, ankle chains. It was an experience I'll never forget. I asked the judge if I could give them all these wristbands that we have that say "You Matter" on them. And she said I could. And so you can imagine putting a wristband that says "You Matter" on a bunch of sets of handcuffed wrists. And it was just extremely emotional and powerful. And afterwards, one of the guys stood up and he said, "Hey, listen, bro, I want you to know that no one's ever told me that I mattered before. And that's why I ended up where I am today." And he just broke and started sobbing. This gentleman, he just changed it a lot for me. I felt like living a life that wasn't about me. In my mind, I was connecting it to acts of service, which I think is still a big part of that, our contribution to something bigger than ourselves. But also there was this internal part of it, this heart part of it that I started to see that, wait, there is this like hole in our hearts, this itch, this that we're trying to scratch. Life isn't easy. Being human is beautiful and it's messy. And whether you're a convicted felon, a CEO, in the military, a teacher, a student, a mom or dad, I just kept seeing this quiet struggle. This is bigger than I thought it was. The other thing that happened too is that when I looked at our customer base, especially on the education side, the majority of our customers were the teachers themselves pulling out their personal credit card to buy our curriculum for $500. And that wasn't okay with me. And so I decided to flip it to a nonprofit organization. It's our mission is to create this world where everyone knows how much and why they matter. And just as we are trying to find cures for disease and get food in people's bellies and roofs on their heads and everything else that we have nonprofit organizations out there for, in my mind, if we have everything, but we don't have a sense of purpose and don't understand why we matter, then why does the rest matter anyways? So I saw it as a problem that we had to solve individually and collectively. From that day forward, we became a nonprofit organization.
Well, this has all led to certainly life-changing work, I know, for you. And, you know, you go from this music exec to you call yourself Dear Abby at one point because you're featured on Oprah.com. You're on the Today Show and all these other media outlets. You're writing more books. I mentioned that you have four best-selling books. And I read You Matter, Learning to Love Who You Really Are. And I absolutely loved it, Matt. And I just, I mean, I laughed out loud. I cried out loud. It was just so wonderful. And I think what's interesting too, in how you sort of sectioned this book off, it's in three sections. The first is I matter, you matter, and we matter. What's the overall theme that you want people to take away from that, given those sections?
Well, first of all, let me say thank you for reading the book. I've done a few podcasts, and it's not often that the host has actually read your book. So I just really appreciate you for that, Liz. It's very sweet of you. This I matter, you matter, we matter thing, again, kind of in hindsight, I realized that that construct was influenced by my therapy journey. In the beginning, like my ship was sinking. There were holes everywhere. Water was crashing on board. It was going down. And so we had to do a lot of internal work, just the I matter stuff. Who am I? Why am I? And what are my emotions? What do I feel? What do I think? After we kind of got me stable, we looked out around me to that ring. Let's say, so if it's concentric circles, there's small one in the middle is the I. Then the next one around me is the you. Looking at my relationships, which ones are life-giving? Which ones are life-sucking? It turns out that a nickname for anxiety disorder is the nice person's disease. Someone says yes to everyone else, but not themselves. No boundaries. So I had to do all that work. And then to me, the it's not about you part is really the last ring, which is the we matter, that we're part of something bigger than ourselves. And no matter what you believe in terms of your faith or religion or your spirituality, any of this stuff, that we are interconnected and we do play a role and have a responsibility to serve something bigger than ourselves. You know, we all have moments where our I matter drops, our you matter increases, our we matters terrible, disconnected. So like when you think about the world we live in today, where there's a lot of disconnection, we talk about disconnected, we talk about loneliness, we talk about lack of belonging. Our we matter has taken a hit. You see a lot of things that happen in the news today. And unfortunately, most of the news that we see, it's caused by humans. It's not like it's a rhino's gone mad running down Wall Street, you know, or shooting up a bowling alley, right? These are people who are making decisions from a place of not understanding how much and why they matter. Picking up trash became kind of like my jam. I got really into picking up litter. It's kind of weird.
Sounds like it.
And in that process, cigarette butts became like the bane of my existence. And so I did the research, and we smoke 300 billion cigarette butts a year in America. And we litter 100 billion of those cigarette butts. And if you take 100 billion cigarette butts and put them end to end, they go from LA to New York 337 round trips a year. So every year we build this cigarette butt litter freeway across our country. And it's really easy for me to see someone litter a cigarette butt and frankly get pissed off. Who are you to do that? What's supposed to happen with that cigarette butt? You know it's going to end up in the ocean. You know it's going to end up in our streams. You know it's going to, you know, what it does to the environment. The challenge for me has been actually that person just doesn't know that they matter. They just don't understand that their actions have a ripple effect. If they understood that, and this is why sometimes I think people don't like me, is because when you spend time with me, you're going to understand that you matter and that you have an impact. Your words, your actions, your thoughts, they ripple. And when you really understand that, and you also know that as adults, we make about 35,000 choices a day, ultimately now you're left with a choice. Do you want to use your power for good or do you want to use it for bad? So people don't necessarily like me to hold that mirror up for them to say, hey, it's up to us to try to find compassion instead of anger and judgment. It's not easy. I think this is what this Every Monday Matters journey has done for me. It's helped me try to be a better person. It's helped me understand that we never know what someone's going through at any given time, whether it's a second or whether it's an hour or for years in a relationship with somebody. I'm always going to try to show up as that person who helps them see and feel that they matter.
At the end of the book that I mentioned about You Matter, there you have journal prompts, which are great, and conversation starters, and you ask the readers to come up with one song to start their day. What's your song, Matt? Do you have one now?
Well, it's funny, because, you know, not long ago, I got asked for the first time, I was doing a keynote, and they said, what's your coming on stage song? And I've never had a coming on stage song. The first song that came to my mind was Eminem, Lose Yourself. You only get one chance, you know, this whole like thing. And I'm like, well, that might not be appropriate.
not so for I this.
I ended up going with the Coldplay song, Every Teardrop is a Waterfall. You know, I love music. We just saw U2 at the Sphere in Vegas, which was an experience like nothing I've ever experienced. I find myself singing all the time. I don't know that I have one song per se, but I do know that life without music would be really sad because music is the soundtrack of our life.
So many stories in your book and of the lives that you've touched, whether it's been someone who you stopped from committing suicide because they heard you speak, or speaking at the prisons because you made them feel like they were seen and heard as opposed to being invisible. And there are a lot of personal stories there too. One, you overcame your fear of flying, but there's one story that people may find surprising. You are literally an S9 Secret Service agent.
I am.
You are. Can you briefly tell us that story? Because it's so good. And who that first person was that you were guarding with your life.
The story starts where I was flying from LA to Little Rock, Arkansas, connecting through Dallas. And I had to get on a tiny plane from Dallas to Little Rock. And I didn't fit in the seat that they gave me because I'm 6'3", 230 pounds. And this plane was tiny. So this sweet woman, Phyllis Dickerson, offered me her seat because there was more room. Phyllis and I became fast friends. And she lives in Little Rock and worked for the governor there. And also I ended up doing the Clinton Library and all this kind of speaking stuff there. One day, Phyllis called me and said, hey, Matt, are you busy tomorrow morning? And it was on a Friday. I said, no, what's going on? She said, well, we need your help. I said, okay. She goes, hang up the phone, you're going to get another phone call. So immediately the phone rings. Hi, this is Dr. or whatever, Sergeant Watson from the Secret Service. And I'm like, okay, now I'm getting punked, right? Like I'm waiting for Ashton Kutcher to come on the phone. They asked me to be at the Beverly Hills Hotel the next morning at 5 a.m. wearing a suit because I'm going to be driving a car in Michelle Obama's motorcade. I'm really not believing any of this. I show up to that hotel that morning, still dark, in my suit, seriously waiting to get punked. Like the cameras are rolling somewhere. I'm looking for cameras, actually. And then all of a sudden, the Secret Service guy said, hey, Matt, nice to meet you. I talked on the phone yesterday. Please come sit in this room. They put me in a holding room by myself. The door opens and it's Michelle Obama. They said, listen, before you meet her, we have one thing. You can only ask her one question. And I said, well, why is that? They said, because she will talk your ear off for hours if you keep asking her questions. She was the sweetest woman. She hugged me. She was so kind. Next thing you know, I am in a car, a Suburban. There's three Suburbans. I'm the driver. I have a Secret Service guy next to me, machine gunners, et cetera. The first trip I did was just to take their luggage to the airport. And then I thought I was done. And they said, no, come back. We need you actually to drive the party as well. So I have to hurry back to the hotel. Next thing you know, it's on. Michelle Obama comes running out. All her team comes running out. And they said, just to stay within 6 to 10 feet of the car in front of you. So we're flying down the streets of Los Angeles. I was so stressed out. I mean, I was surprised I didn't break the steering wheel. Flying down the roads. And all of a sudden, I feel this tickle. I'm imagining this is the part that you got a chuckle on. I started feeling this tickle on the back of my neck and my hair. And I start shrugging just to try to get to stop, thinking maybe it was a bug or something. And all of a sudden, this gentleman says, oh, I just love your hair. I'm like, well, thank you. I'm trying to drive. Like, you just stop touching my hair. Well, it turns out I had her beauty team in my car. So I had her stylist, her makeup artist, her hairstylist. So this guy was the hairstylist. He fancied me. Anyways, he's like, so Mr. Driver, what do you do for a living when you're not driving? And I said, well, I wrote this book called Every Monday Matters. I run this nonprofit organization, et cetera. Oh, well, this is awesome. Can I have a copy? So I hand my phone back without even turning my head, just hand it to him and said, here, here's my phone. Put your information in the phone. I'll send you a copy. I'm just like being super short because I'm so stressed. And then it happened. He's like, well, I need your security code for your phone. And I was born in the year 69. And so I said, it's 696969. And he goes, oh, Mr. Driver, Every Monday Matters 69er. I'm like, oh, no. No.
We'll let the audience figure out what that is when they go and look it up. Oh, my God. It's such a great story. So besides being a Secret Service agent, you are a keynote speaker. You've talked about that. And your message really is about self-worth to millions of people, from elementary school kids to employees at large corporations. This is your life's mission. This is really the work that you're doing. And what I found so interesting when I was reading the book also is that you talk about that your breakdown was actually a blessing. And it really changed you for the better. Do you still feel that way?
Absolutely. My brother's a doctor. And he told me after my breakdown, he's like, Matt, this is going to take years for you to heal, which I didn't want to believe, my older brother. And he said, it's going to take years for you to heal. But know that one day you're going to be grateful that it happened. And I don't know that I believed that. Now I do. Now I can say I wouldn't have changed it for the world. It's made me such a better person. And it's led me to a life where I've impacted lives. And I always said, if I just impact one life, like that's enough. But fortunately, it's been more than that. And I wake up every morning with such purpose and such just clear vision. When you're on a mission, it's a really beautiful place to be. Yet you still have to protect yourself because you can also end up not taking care of your eye matter when you're on a mission. Yeah, I'm so grateful for what happened. I'm inspired every day by people. It drives me to always try to do better, to do more. At the same time, it drives me to be super supportive of their efforts and what they're doing and what their life's work is. And there's a sense of community that I've found in people who care deeply and want to do good and still have hope for a better world. And sometimes, you know, I am a sensitive guy. And sometimes, I guess, back to that warning that you gave, sometimes the state of things makes me sad. it's like, wow, I thought we've done so much good work and every Monday matters, but we clearly have a lot of work to do.
And you're doing great work. And ladies and gentlemen who are listening right now, if you want to learn more about Every Monday Matters and Matt's fabulous work and all of the books that he has, just go to MatthewMurgian.com. We're going to have that for you in our show notes so that you can get that link. Matt, in the short time that I have known you, you have certainly touched my life, and I'm truly grateful for that. And I'm honored that you joined me today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Liz, for having me. And it's been an honor to be here. And I'm going to have you on my podcast next. So stay tuned.
I would love that. Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's my turn to ask the question.
Okay. Your turn to ask the questions. And thanks to all of you who have been listening today. Know that you matter. And yes, that birth certificate warning label may have some rough times, some sad times, as Matt just said, but there is love. There is joy, purpose, and goodness. And when you share in that, you are living your best life. Until next time, be well.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Fast Twitch Media, helping people tell their stories and giving them worldwide reach. The future is in the cloud, and Fast Twitch Media can take you there. Be your best digital self. Check out fasttwitchmedia.space.